The wedding was supposed to be just a night to forget. My cousin's big day. Everyone dressed like mannequins, shoved into fancy clothes, pretending to have a good time. I was one of the bridesmaids, stuck with a dress that choked me and shoes that felt like torture devices. My boyfriend was already drunk before the ceremony even started. Typical. As guests laughed and cheered, I noticed him almost immediately. Not because he stood out in a crowd. He didn't. He looked like a regular old man, but something about him felt off. He didn't talk to anyone, didn't laugh, didn't move much. He just sat in the corner of the reception hall, staring at the ceiling or maybe through it. He wasn't on anyone's guest list. No one I recognized, and yet he was there. I nudged my boyfriend, trying to point him out quietly. He barely registered it, slapped my arm and laughed, spinning me toward the dance floor. The music blasted and the drunk smiles blurred around me, but I kept stealing glances at the man. Then suddenly, he vanished. Just like that, gone. That's when things started to feel wrong. I told my boyfriend again, but he was too wasted to care. I scanned the room trying to spot the man. No luck. I asked a few guests if they had seen him, but nobody noticed anything. The music was too loud, the chatter too thick. My gut screamed at me to look for him, to find out why a stranger was crashing a family wedding. Without thinking, I slipped away from the crowd and moved toward the back entrance of the hall. The air outside was colder, the quiet sharp. No one followed me. No one even seemed to care. The reception was a bubble where no one noticed things that didn't fit. As I reached the edge of the building, I spotted a door leading to a storage room. The same door the man had disappeared behind. My heart hammered, but I pushed it open. Inside, I found him. The old man sitting on the floor, his face buried in his hands, shaking like he was crying. He looked fragile, broken, no threat in sight. I lowered myself next to him and asked if he was okay. The moment he looked up, the air shifted. His eyes were wet, but cold, empty. There was something wrong in the way he moved. He didn't just stand up. He got up like a beast, rising slow and deliberate. His crying felt forced, like a mask hiding something darker. He took a step closer and whispered, voice cracked.
"Brides make me sad. Weddings remind me of how alone I am."
He kept moving toward me, but his tears didn't stop. It was like he wanted me to feel sorry for him, but there was no mercy in those eyes. He stopped just inches away, almost crushing the space between us.
"Are you going to marry me?"
he asked, his voice trembling, but heavy, almost like a demand. I tried to back away, but my legs refused to listen. Panic flooded in, cold and raw. I turned to run, but felt his hands clamp hard on my arm from behind.
"He's not dangerous," I wanted to tell myself,
but the way he held me told another story. His grip tightened while he kept apologizing between shaky breaths.
"Sorry, sorry, please don't leave me."
I didn't care about his apologies. I shoved his face away, slammed my fist into his ribs. He grunted, but didn't let it go. The pain twisted into a raw survival instinct. I kicked and scratched, finally breaking free, scrambling for the door. Outside the storage room, a man was standing, smoking a cigarette, watching the whole mess with half interest until I yelled for help. He dropped the cigarette and stepped in, ready to protect. The old man turned his crazed attention to him, eyes wide and wild. Without warning, he lunged, fists flying. The smoker tried to block, but the old man hit him hard in the face. The sound of bone breaking filled the air. The smoker crumpled to the ground, groaning. I didn't wait for what came next. I ran like hell, desperate to get help. Every step was agony, but I forced myself forward. The sound of chaos behind me grew louder. The old man was hunting us. I burst into the main hall, yelling for someone, anyone to call the police. My boyfriend was passed out on a table, useless. Guests stopped dancing, frozen by confusion and fear. From the back door, the old man stormed out, wild and angry, still grabbing at anyone who tried to stop him. He swung wildly, breaking glasses, knocking tables. People screamed, dodged, or tried to pin him down. I saw the smoker trying to crawl away, blood running from his mouth. The old man went after him again, grabbing him by the neck and slamming him into a wall. The sickening crack echoed, and the room seemed to stop breathing. Someone tackled the old man from behind, holding him down as more guests rushed to help. They struggled, but he was strong, like a cornered animal. Sirens blared outside. The police came, dragging the old man away, cuffs tight on his wrists. He kept crying, mumbling about loneliness and weddings. No one made sense of it then. I was taken to the hospital because of the cuts and bruises. My head throbbed, but what burned more was the feeling of being hunted, like the old man's cold eyes were still on me, even when I closed mine. Later, the cops told us he was a psychiatric patient who escaped from a nearby facility. No one knew how he ended up at the wedding. The fact that he targeted me, asked me to marry him, that part no one could explain. I guess I was unlucky, or maybe it was my fault. I should have never followed that man.
I was working the night shift at a wedding hall in Ciudad Obregón. It wasn't even my usual spot, but someone quit, and I needed the money. The place was expensive. Crystal, flowers, lights hanging from the ceiling. A family that looked like they bought silence more than once. Everyone smiled too wide, drank too fast. I stayed in my lane. Food, drinks, trays, cleanup. That was all. The bride was young, pretty, but stiff. She walked like she had weights on her back. The groom acted like he was marrying a trophy. His mother wouldn't stop watching them. Not just watching, inspecting. She had the kind of face that doesn't blink unless it's necessary. Her dress cost more than my apartment. She stayed close to the dessert table all night, and that's where it started. Each table got a single dessert plate, strawberry cheesecake with glaze. Except right before serving, the bride's mother-in-law leaned over, pulled something from her purse, and poured it onto one of the pieces. Thicker jam, homemade maybe. She spread it with care, then moved the plate to the center. I froze. That detail hadn't slipped by me. Strawberries were banned. The bride was severely allergic. I heard her say it when she arrived. Everyone in catering knew. No strawberry anywhere. I saw that plate and knew. I didn't scream. I walked up fast and tripped on the edge of the table. The plate hit the floor. Some guests gasped. The bride stepped back, startled. The mother-in-law locked eyes with me. Not surprised. Not concern. Just cold, sharp calculation. She knew I knew. But I smiled, apologized, and walked away like nothing happened. The ambulance arrived about an hour later. The bride had managed to eat a few bites from a second slice. Someone had given her a different piece, but it still had jam. She started vomiting in the restroom, couldn't breathe, collapsed. A guest who was a doctor helped until medics took her. The whole party shut down. Some people left, others whispered. The mother-in-law disappeared before anyone noticed she was gone. I stayed, told the event coordinator what I saw. She didn't want trouble, but the story spread fast. Cops questioned me. I gave my full statement. Turns out I wasn't the only one who saw her messing with the food. Another staff member confirmed it. A week later, she was arrested. Attempted homicide. Poisoning. It was in the local papers. I had to go down to the station again, repeat everything. Her face was everywhere. Everyone said the same thing. She'd rather see her son a widower than married to that girl. The bride survived. Barely. The groom stayed with her. That seemed to drive the mother even crazier. I guess she couldn't stand losing control. I didn't hear much after that night. Life moved on. I quit that job, started working at a small diner outside the city. Night shifts, low pay, but quiet. Or it used to be. Until tonight. I got home a little past midnight. My place was a single-bedroom apartment above a closed auto shop. Nothing fancy, but cheap. The street was empty. I remember looking up at the light in my hallway window. It was off, like always. But when I reached the door, something was wrong. It wasn't fully closed. Just a crack. Enough to see the edge of the floor mat inside. I never leave it open. Never. I stood there for maybe a full minute. No wind, no sounds. I should have left. Called someone. But I didn't. I pushed it open slowly and stepped in. No lights. I reached for the switch. Nothing. Dead. I tried again. Still nothing. My phone had full battery, so I turned on the flashlight. The first thing I saw was the kitchen chair, pulled out. Then the fridge door, wide open. On the table was a plate. Some kind of cheesecake from the wedding. I stepped closer. Thick red jam on top. The smell was sweet, but not right. Like it had been sitting out too long. The plate was new. I didn't own one like that. And it wasn't cold. Whoever brought it had been here for a while. I backed up, tried to call someone. No signal. I opened a messaging app, tried to send a voice note. Still, nothing went through. I went to the window. That's when I saw him. Across the street, a man, standing perfectly still under the flickering streetlight. No movement, just watching. I closed the window and locked it. Heart beating fast, my eyes scanned the room again. The plate was gone. Something creaked near the bathroom. I turned, light in hand, and stepped into the hallway. The smell of the jam was stronger now. Sweet. Rotten. I moved toward the bedroom. That's when I heard him.
Try it. Just a bite.
His voice was dry, low, like someone speaking through a mouthful of dust. I stopped moving. My bedroom door was closed. I knew it had been opened when I left. My hands were shaking now, but I gripped the flashlight even tighter and approached. Slowly, I put my ear to the door. Nothing. Then,
"It's good. You'll like it." She did.
I stepped back, turned. The bathroom light flicked on by itself. I didn't even hear the switch. I ran into the living room. Grabbed the landline. No tone. I turned and saw him coming out of the hallway. The same man from outside. He didn't run or lunge. He just walked. Calm. Determined. He was holding another plate.
"You destroyed everything. My wife's in prison. My son won't talk to me. Because of you."
He threw the plate. It shattered against the wall beside me. Jam and shards everywhere. He grabbed a fork from his coat pocket. I dodged and hit him with a lamp. He stumbled, but didn't fall. I tried to run past him, but he blocked the way. He grabbed my wrist and forced it toward my mouth.
"Eat it. Just one bite. Just like she did."
His fingers pressed the fork against my lips. I twisted, elbowed him in the stomach, and ran back into the bedroom. I slammed the door and dragged the dresser in front of it. My breath was broken into pieces. I held my phone again. Still nothing. No signal. Just the man's footsteps outside the room.
I watched you for months. You're always alone. Always up late.
He tried the door, then laughed.
You should have minded your own business. I warned her not to trust the staff.
The banging started. First slow, then harder. He shouted every time he hit the door.
Eat it! Eat it!
The door cracked. Wood splinters flew. I grabbed the edge of the dresser and pushed it with everything I had. But the frame was giving out. I ran to the window and pulled it open. Two floors up. I didn't care. I climbed onto the ledge. I heard the final crack of the door, and he was in the room. I jumped. I landed hard. Something popped in my shoulder. Pain shot up my side. But I was outside, screaming. Neighbors opening doors. Someone ran toward me. Then more lights. Sirens. Police. They kicked in the front door. He didn't resist. They found him sitting on the floor, rocking back and forth, whispering something about justice. Now, he's in jail with his wife. I would say I'm safe, but I'm not. The man didn't kill anybody. I survived. He is going to be released. And when he is, something tells me that I'm gonna see him again. The following story is inspired by an attempted poisoning at a wedding in Mexico in 2023. The bride's mother-in-law tried to harm her by putting strawberry jam in the desserts, knowing that the bride was allergic to that fruit. The woman began to have a severe allergic reaction, vomiting, swelling, and difficulty breathing. She required urgent medical attention, which caused the party to be suspended. The mother-in-law was reported for attempted murder and grievous bodily harm, as a waitress saw her intentionally adding the jam, and a criminal investigation was opened. She defended herself by claiming that the dessert was for her and that it was an accident, later saying, "Why all the drama if she didn't even die?"
My name is Claire. I've been married for 6 years, and all those years I carried bruises that no one wanted to see. It started the day of our wedding. When the priest asked me if I was sure, I hesitated. My hand trembled. Daniel grabbed my arm in front of everyone, shook me hard, and forced the answer out of me. Guests laughed nervously, thinking it was a silly moment, but I knew it wasn't. It was a warning. From that day, I learned that silence was safer than questions. I learned to hide bruises under long sleeves, to plaster a smile for friends and family, to walk carefully around his temper. People believed the excuses I invented. I fell, I slipped, I'm clumsy. No one wanted to press harder. I thought maybe things would calm down if I adapted. If I gave him what he wanted, if I didn't answer back, maybe he'd stop. But control never satisfied him. He needed more. And that night, the one I'll never forget, he finally showed me he wasn't trying to scare me anymore. He wanted me gone. It was after midnight when I heard the front door slam open. I was in the kitchen, drying a glass, trying not to make noise. My stomach tightened instantly. He had been drinking. I could smell it before he even walked in. Daniel entered slowly, his face red, his shirt unbuttoned halfway and his eyes bloodshot. He didn't say anything. He just sat at the table and tapped his fingers, staring at me like I was a stranger. The tapping got faster, harder, until the sound filled the room. I put the glass down, afraid I'd break it if I kept holding it. The silence stretched too long. His lips curled into a twisted smile. He stood up, dragged the chair back, and slipped his hand into his pocket. When he pulled out the knife, I froze. The sharp metal caught the kitchen light, and my pulse shot up. The knife wasn't huge, but in his hand it looked like the end of everything. He pointed it at me, shaking slightly, grinning like he'd already decided how this was going to end. "Babe, I'm tired of pretending with you. Tonight, it's just you and me. No more games." I stepped back until my spine hit the counter. There was nowhere to go. My eyes darted to the utensils, the pans, but nothing looked useful. His steps were slow, like he was enjoying dragging it out. He raised the knife, waiting for me to beg. I ducked under his arm and shoved him with all my strength. His shoulder slammed into the fridge, and I ran toward the living room. My feet hit the floor so loud, but I didn't care. He growled and came after me, his shoes thudding unevenly closer and closer. I turned just in time to see him hurl the knife. The blade whistled past my head and buried itself in the wall. The sound of metal piercing plaster echoed in my ears. Before I could react, his hand grabbed a fistful of my hair and yanked me backward. I screamed as I hit the floor, the impact knocking the air out of me. He straddled me, fists pounding into my face and ribs. The pain came fast, sharp, leaving me dizzy. I clawed at his arms, but he was stronger, heavier. The only thing that saved me was pure desperation. My hand brushed against the TV remote on the floor. I swung it up and smashed it against his temple. He grunted, loosened his grip, and I shoved him off just enough to crawl away. I stumbled to my feet and lunged for the phone on the coffee table. I dialed with shaking hands, but before I could finish, he slapped it out of my hand. The phone clattered under the couch, useless. He towered over me, breathing heavy, blood dripping from the cut on his temple. His eyes were wild now, locked onto me like prey. I bolted toward the hallway, legs trembling, and ran to the bedroom. My only chance was the second phone inside. My heart hammered as I slammed the door shut and locked it. His fist pounded against the wood immediately, each hit sending cracks through the frame. The sound was deafening, the door rattling under his weight. I pressed my back against it, trying to keep it closed, but I knew the lock wouldn't last. Splinters started to break off. The banging grew harder, faster, until I felt the frame give way. I sprinted to the nightstand, yanked open the drawer, and grabbed the phone. My fingers shook so badly I almost dropped it. I dialed 911, choking out the words. "Please, he's trying to kill me. Send help. Please hurry." The dispatcher's calm voice barely registered in my ears. Then the door finally burst open. Daniel stormed in, holding the knife again. I screamed as the phone slipped from my hand and hit the floor. He lunged forward, slashing. I grabbed the lamp and smashed it across his arm. The bulb exploded, sparks and glass flying everywhere. He cursed, stumbled, then came at me again. His knife sliced into my arm, a hot flash of pain that made me gasp. Blood ran down, soaking my sleeve, but I forced myself to keep moving. The room was chaos. Broken glass, blood on the carpet, furniture knocked over. He charged again, knife raised. I shoved the dresser hard, sending the drawer slamming into his knees. He stumbled forward, roaring in rage. I backed toward the window, fumbling with the lock. My finger slipped on the blood, but I forced it open and pushed it up. Cold night air hit my face. I climbed halfway out when his hand closed around my ankle and yanked me back. My nails dug into the frame, ripping as I tried to hold on. He pulled harder, dragging me inside. I hit the floor hard, twisting as he pressed the knife against my throat. His face hovered inches from mine, eyes bulging, sweat dripping. His voice was a hiss. "You don't get to leave me. You're mine until the end." The blade pressed harder. I felt the sharp sting breaking skin. I kicked wildly, kneeing him in the ribs. He grunted but didn't let go. I grabbed the broken lamp base and slammed it into his face. The sharp edge cut deep and blood poured down his cheek. He howled and recoiled just long enough for me to crawl toward the window again. My vision blurred, my chest heaving. I thought it was over, that he was going to end it right there. And then, sirens. Loud, close. Flashing red and blue lights outside the window. Daniel's head snapped toward the sound. For the first time that night, his face showed panic. He backed away, knife still dripping with my blood, eyes darting toward the hallway. He cursed under his breath, then bolted out of the bedroom. I heard the back door slam, then silence. I staggered to the window, waving my arm, blood smearing the frame. Officers rushed in seconds later, guns drawn, shouting, but the house was empty. He had escaped. I collapsed on the floor, clutching my arm, sobbing silently. The house around me looked destroyed, and I felt the same way. I wasn't sure if I was alive or just waiting for him to come back. They never caught him. The police searched, but he was gone. Officially, he's a fugitive. Unofficially, he's still out there, breathing the same air, maybe watching me right now. I left the house 6 months later. I changed numbers, changed everything, but fear doesn't pack itself in boxes. It follows you. My scars are a reminder. But the worst scar is the sound of his voice, burned into my head. Sometimes I wake up sure I hear his footsteps outside the door. That slap on my wedding day should have been enough. I should have left then, but I didn't. And because of that, I'll spend the rest of my life looking over my shoulder, waiting for Daniel to come back.